Welcome everyone to What the Force, and welcome to our very last Clone Wars special report that we know of. And I'm Marie Claire Gould, your host, and with me is Kyle Gould. All right, a little Tusken Raider.
I don't know if it translates on sound, but I raised my arms high above my head.
I could hear it in your voice.
Over and over.
Yeah, I could hear the movement.
Yeah.
We've had some really amazing feedback over the course of this series, so I want to thank everyone for tuning in and listening to me and my husband talk about Star Wars more in-depthly than we usually do, which is just argue about certain things in the saga. This has been a lot of fun. I'm really, really glad that you decided to do this with me, Kyle.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, everyone, for being kind and saying nice things when you said things at all. It's been a lot of note-taking.
Yeah.
And trying to match. See, I have to write all these notes just to match your level of knowledge, right? I do the work you have done for years.
Yeah, you're like trying to fit it all in. And it's not like you weren't a Star Wars fan. It's just, I don't know, I absorb it differently, I think.
I just have not watched it as many times as you have, nor thought about it with as much frequency as you. I was like, oh, cool, a bird flies around at the end. That's a nice, interesting shot you would not normally get to make without a crane or a helicopter. And you're like, no, there's spiritual meaning in regards to the bird with the tail thing. And I was like, oh. It's black on white. What more do you... Oh.
Yeah. Okay, so this episode was episode 12 of season 7, Victory and Death.
Tusken Raiders would be proud.
Yes. That's literally what they choose usually.
Yep. Although I will go back to episode 1. Tusken Raiders out there shooting at pods in the pod racing. I bet they had bets or whatnot going on pods and then just sabotage it in true Tusken Raider way. That's just my headcanon there. I feel
you want the Tusken Raider betting ring?
Well, at least some sort of, instead of just like pissed off Tusken Raiders just taking pot shots.
Like they were trying to get some extra money.
Maybe the pod race track goes through Tusken Raider sacred land and they're like just pissed. Like, no, that's enough. This has to stop.
I wouldn't put it past them.
I doubt anyone's thought about that as deeply as I have. So.
You think about episode 1 pretty deeply.
I think about episode 1 all the time. All the time.
So what did you think of Victory and Death? And I mean, it is kind of the end of this four-part arc, the end of the season, the end of the series, presumably.
I want to call it Nail in the Coffin.
Okay.
Which I'll get to later on.
Okay.
I'll cycle around to that. I loved it, and yet in many ways, this episode and the one previous felt a little long on visual, short on story.
Yeah, and I think that the reason is that they had to basically have all of this emotional and fight climax, you know?
It's possible. Let's get to the good stuff at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. So we open exactly where we left, which was
a completely different logo startup again.
I know.
So interesting.
And they were all red.
Yeah.
So that's...
Although episode 3 seemed kind of orange.
Huh.
Didn't it? It did not seem nearly as red as all the other ones have, but that might have just been the TV we watched it on.
Like, in this one, particularly, the Star Wars faded out first, and then the Clone Wars.
And it was Star Wars across the top this time, as opposed to Star Wars, which was episode 2, had the Star Wars at the bottom.
It's weird.
They're just flashing through all the different...
Logos,
because different people worked on those logos over the years. Mm-hmm. And so they're just honoring those people by, I mean, keeping it in red. This was not a Darth Maul episode.
No.
Maul, just Maul.
He had one line.
I thought it was more, but you may be right.
I wrote it down. There might have been more, but I mean, there was only the one that I saw. And he looked intensely. He glared at things a lot, but I think he only had the one line.
Killed a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he kind of...
He's responsible for killing everybody on that ship, except for the fact that Rex gave the order to jettison the escape pods.
Correct. And Ahsoka freed him and told him to go be a distraction.
Yeah, and told him to go and do this.
So, and he reminds her of that just as she tries to cut his head off. But again, we get ahead of ourselves.
Yes. So let's start out. Rex is still in the medical bay.
No recap. Which is kind of like, I'm sad for that because I like the recaps, but at the same time, no stupid Yul Larin. So that's good too. So it's kind of, you know, one, six and one, half a dozen on the other. Why are stun bolts circles? The guns don't even look like they shoot circles.
And all guns have a stun setting. It feels like good people need to use the stun setting all the time.
I would think they should. You would want them to.
But that's just like not a thing that's used regularly. Like,
yeah.
So like it, and this actually becomes a semi-ethical debate over the course of the episode that, you know, Ahsoka's like, please put your gun on stun. And Rex is like, they're going to kill us. It's like kill or be killed in this environment. And she reminds him that they don't really have a choice in this.
Well, they don't know the ship's going to crash.
Yeah, they don't.
At this point. She tells him to set it to stun because they think they can get away.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily kill or be killed. He then doesn't take the gun off of stun, even though the ship is crashing, because that would just take time. Time that he could spend shooting more clone troopers.
Yes, with the stun. It makes me question a lot of people in the galaxy far, far away that just use blasters.
Yes.
And don't actually stun.
Yeah, absolutely agreed.
Maybe it's slower.
If his little handguns have stun settings and the rifles have stun settings, then you would think that everything would have stun settings in between.
Yeah. And so, like, why aren't stun settings the base?
Should be.
It's making me question things, and that's always a bad thing in Star Wars for me, because I'm like, why does this ethical quandary exist?
Maybe because shooting the round bullets is harder to graphically show than shooting the straight ones.
Oh, yeah. It's way easier to show the straight ones.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Either way, they make the decision, go to stun.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly she stuns people, but as you so clearly pointed out, that door she blows, that those people aren't getting up anytime soon from that.
I mean, they're at least crippled.
Yes. Like, they are mauled.
Yes. She deflects blaster bolts, and she is trying not to hit people.
Yeah.
But I'm sure she hit at least somebody. But I do appreciate the, you know, try to do as little harm as possible. And I think that was really admirable and really showed like Ahsoka herself as a character and who she has become.
Yep. Especially in the first scenes, I watched those on repeat again when I was doing the death count. Mm-hmm. And it's very clear that she doesn't hit them with the bolts at all. It's the round circular beams that hit all of the people they fight and face before they have to dash off with droids in tow.
Yeah, I love that there's
droid tourage.
I love that there's three droids, by the way.
Yes.
And one thing that kind of always bothers me about trio talk is that there's never really just a trio. There's always like a Chewbacca and like two droids in tow.
Yeah.
Or, you know, at least one droid or a Chewbacca and a droid. Like it's always an ensemble.
Yeah.
And people get stuck on this concept of a trio.
Yeah, well, it's the Three Musketeers screwed us for that, because there was three Musketeers, and who's this kid?
Oh yeah, that other guy. But it's still the Three Musketeers.
It's four Ninja Turtles and their rat master.
Yeah.
And their yellow wearing reporter lady friend.
And Casey Jones.
Exactly. Not all the time, but enough of the time to make it.
Enough of the time that he saves people and he's like a major character in like the movies.
All right. Much like our shifting, the show shifts right away to Maul, because that's what we think is the two different things happening here.
Mm-hmm.
And Maul has stolen a bracer from some clone trooper and he's listening in.
Yep.
Where's he going? What's he doing?
Okay.
It looks so ominous. He's moving with purpose. He's not walking around randomly in this scene.
Well, it was really interesting because he hears that Ahsoka is with Rex, and they and there's a couple of dehumanizing things that happen for the troopers. We see more troopers in just plain white.
Yeah.
Which is reminiscent of the transference to the Empire. Even though logically there is no reason that there would just be troopers in white, I guess, unless they're brand new Kamino, like off the rack,
straight out of the tube,
straight out of the tube, you know, troops, right? And you hear over the comm they use Rex's call sign number rather than his name. So I really liked that from the flip of the switch, and suddenly they are dehumanized and part of the overall machine of war.
To a greater or lesser extent, especially in the Maul moments.
Yes.
That's the case.
Yeah. And so he hears that they are basically on the run, etc. I don't know what his decision-making process is, other than to basically pull the ship out of hyperdrive. That seems to be his first...
Well, he doesn't want to go back to Sidious.
No,
he doesn't want to go back to Vader in the end.
Yeah.
He doesn't know about that yet.
He will, you know, Palpatine.
But he Sidious, has to assume that Palpatine's apprentice has now saved the day for Sidious, because he's felt that.
Yeah.
And he did not, like, he doesn't feel Anakin's death. He's not going to feel that. So.
Yeah. And one other thing that's really interesting is they call him Lord Sidious in the episode before, and then they call him Darth Sidious in this episode. And I was like, everybody knows your made up villain name. That seems weird.
Especially the Darth part. I was fine with Lord, but then that step up to Darth Sidious. I mean, it's a title, right? He's going to flaunt it now. He's got it. He better flaunt it.
I mean, and it's just not publicly known. Like, it was just like that's kind of my problem.
Because he's Emperor Palpatine.
He's Emperor Palpatine, and people don't know that he's a Sith Lord. And it's like very clear in all of the canon.
By the time of Return of the Jedi.
That like nobody knows about.
But let's
Force
be clear.
Users.
The clones are all dead.
By that point.
By that time.
Or decommissioned.
By A New Hope, all the clones are dead. And so if they're the only ones that knew him as that.
Yeah, but it's really hard to keep an army of millions quiet when you're like recruiting new people and those people are responsible for training the new people,
unless Order 67 is kill yourselves.
I guess,
which is very well and possible, because at the end of this episode, well, we'll get to that.
Okay,
because right now we learn there is more than one hyperdrive. That's what I really loved from the takeaway on that. This ship has more than one hyperdrive.
Because he had to destroy, like, both sides.
He destroyed. But they also said...
What did they say?
They said the hyper drives, plural.
Well, I mean, I you know, you kind of look at the back and there's two tailpipes, right? So
right, you know. And so it's like, but it could have been more than two. But he took out all of the hyper drives.
The plural.
Which, I mean, it also makes sense. It's so big. It's a Star Destroyer.
Yeah.
It's going to have more than one hyper drive.
I don't understand how hyper drives work, so... whatever they say works.
Yes. Also, it's just like basically ripped the engine right out of the car, and then the car started to slow down. But I loved how it dropped out of warp. I mean, hyperdrive.
Yes.
The smoke that was coming off of it as it dropped out, you could feel the immenseness of the vehicle slowing down as it kind of just drifted.
And then it kind of got caught up in the gravity of that planet and like
the moon. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know why we're just talking about the ship right now, but I think it's important.
Ships.
Yeah. But the ship actually like angles towards the planet exactly like what happens in the Battle of Jakku, where the Star Destroyers fall out of the sky and like straight into the planet. And there's actually this beautiful shot of it on the cover of Lost Stars. There's a beautiful shot of it on the cover of Lost Stars where like the Star Destroyers, going directly into the planet.
And which it doesn't end up doing.
No, it doesn't.
It looks like it's going to. Enters those clouds, which again, those clouds.
Yeah.
Oh, they're so wispy and real looking.
Yeah.
They are. I wanted to fly around in those clouds. You remember the movie about the boy who could fly? Literally called The Boy Who Could Fly?
No.
And he like flies around. It's like that.
Okay. But what I appreciated about these last four episodes is that parts of it look like they could have been part of the prequels. Like they were that good from an animation perspective.
Yes, absolutely.
Especially like when you look at like people like Plo Koon and Aayla Secura who were animated, you know, in this, but they look enough like the characters that were.
Or even Gigi.
Yeah, Gigi, yeah.
Gigi's design was amazing.
Yeah.
I love her.
Yeah, she's so cute. So we're on to this. They end up getting to the control room. They're like, how do we get out of this? Oh, there's a ship. We got to open up the door. So this is Ahsoka and Rex. And they end up having this really touching conversation.
Oh, my God. Well, we're not there yet because we saw the moon, which, oh, my God, it's also gorgeous. There's so much detail.
I thought we were talking about the outer space stuff. Okay.
We're crashing towards this. Is part of that moment. We see the moon and you see the snow, you see the continents of it. It has so much depth and degree of color and
it was gorgeous.
I want to go hang out on that moon. It's really cold, but
and then they make it to the control room.
Yes.
To basically open up the hangar doors.
To make their plan.
And to make their plan. And they have this moment where, you know, Rex is like, you know, what can we do? We might have to make the hard choice. And she takes off his helmet, which is an act of humanization for him.
Yep.
And reminds him that he is like all of them. And that everybody deserves a chance to live.
Yep. Very humanizing.
Yes.
And also let us see the tear.
Yes. And
how many tears of Rex have gone unseen?
It's very true. He's a very sensitive boy. This is why I love him. He is tough. He is sensitive. And he protect. Their relationship is really, really important to me on a personal level. I think that they have like one of the best developed friendships in all of Star Wars.
Yeah. I can't. It is complicated. It's like a cake. There's multiple layers to it because the relationship exists in they see each other in each other's eyes.
Yeah.
They have a commander, subordinate, older person, younger person relationship to each other. So there's strange dynamics always at play.
There's also like this capability and like she's this like weird superhero type character and he's just like just soldier ma'am.
Dependable sidekick boy.
Yeah, effectively.
And they both have a similar relationship with Anakin.
Yeah. Yep. I love it.
And then she says, "You're a good soldier, Rex. So is everyone down there. Sorry, so is every one of those men down there. They may be willing to die, but I am not the one that's going to kill them."
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how the other actresses portrayed it, but that line is that's the culmination of Ahsoka's character from Ashley Eckstein, because she doesn't just read that line. She lives that line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was really, really glorious.
It's the only ship that can be used to get out of here that isn't under repair, and it's fully guarded. And when they open the doors, all of the clones rush out, not in a semblance of like, you know, guys on their knees, other guys standing behind them in an array ready to shoot. They are rank and file as though commander is addressing them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that decision that really got to me too, because like they're still addressing her. They're still addressing Rex.
Yep.
But they have this chip and they have their order.
Yeah. And there's this layer of betrayal and like, you know, and the kick in the guts is it is Jesse who was literally just saved.
Yeah.
You know, and two episodes before from Maul.
Yeah.
And he's the one who is like questioning Rex and facing off against Rex. And Rex is trying to convince them, like, look, only a Sith deals in absolutes.
Right.
There's a gray area here. Look, she left the Jedi, you know. It just culminates everything that has happened to Ahsoka's character, in that you cannot deny your past. You cannot deny what you have done, good or bad. And you have to face that at some point and reconcile that within yourself.
It sure makes the decision artistically to put the Grand Army of the Republic's sigil on Jesse's helmet.
Yes, which has been there since like season one.
We met Jesse.
Yes.
And now he's Captain Jesse.
Yes.
And now he's the one in charge. He basically kicks Commander Rex out of his position and takes over in that role.
Yeah.
And his is the last helmet that we see I'm getting ahead of myself again.
Yeah, you are.
But I keep rushing towards this end.
But
the show doesn't.
Yeah, I know. But their face-off is really heart-wrenching because of their history, and they all feel the things, even though they can't control what the orders are and what they have said they need to do. And I love that Ahsoka's like, just delay a little longer, and the droids are working on, you know, getting the ship going, and then the plan.
It's a good plan. I love this plan.
Do you?
I love it. They all fall.
I know. And I'm like we argue about death count a little bit more, probably because we started to do it.
Right.
And I'm like, they're all dead. And you're like, no, they're not. They're just down there. And I'm like,
was right.
And I'm like, at least somebody broke a leg or like a back or something. But again, they're clones. They're genetically, you know, created to be stronger and better than other soldiers. And
I literally had to scratch out people that I thought were stunned, because at one point in the fight here, she pushes Jesse off the edge. And I'm like, well, he's probably stunned in quotation marks. But then we go down and he's up running around just shooting just willy nilly just fine. So I was like, dang it. Scritch, scritch.
Yeah. So the droids come to the rescue again. Droids save the day. Awesome. George Lucas would be proud of you.
Yep.
Maul has snuck upon this scene in an attempt to steal their getaway vehicle.
Yep. Mwahaha. And you know that scene where there's a chase and the guy stops and he's like, oh, some garbage. And he just like throws the garbage down and then he turns and runs again. And then the good guy or the bad guy like leaps the garbage. That kind of felt like what he did when he turned and he grabbed all the boxes and the cargo crates that were there and he just threw them at her with the force. Like, take some of that.
My friend David, Mindful Jedi on Twitter, reminded me that there's this like many people who start to meditate realize like after they've been meditating for like a solid week, stuff starts to break around them. Like, this is just a common phenomenon. Like, your car will break down or you'll, like, lose your keys. And it's, like, a bunch of stuff all in a row. Because it's, like, suddenly the world is, like, trying to counteract the fact that you're actually very peacefully minded in your brain. And it feels like that's exactly what's happening in the show. And we see these two very, very strong force users. And the extent of the force use that is happening is Ahsoka is very clearly mindful of what she needs to do. She's compassionate. She's extremely light side in everything that she is doing and the choices that she is making. And Maul is literally like throwing garbage at her. And yep. Like her car is going away. She can't seem to get anything right. And yet she's very mindful and in the moment. And all of these things are happening around her in this very chaotic way because she almost asked for it.
And she almost gets him.
Yeah, and she almost gets him.
So close. You can see the animation. He reaches up and touches his throat after he throws her back. Like, it was that close.
It was that close. You know, you asked for the chaos. You asked for this chaos. And it's true. And it's like, you know, they could have worked together. in an effort to do stuff, but she doesn't feel like she can ever trust him.
No, they could never work.
I think they could. That's the point. That's the point, is to reconcile your own shadow. And Maul is a shadow.
Not hers.
He's Obi-Wan's, but he's also hers now.
I think they have come into, they have collided and bounced off of each other.
They have unfinished business.
Do they?
They do.
What is their unfinished business?
I think it's just their discussion of what is... I think that he is a version of her that could have happened, right? With the wrong master. And I don't know. I just think that they still... Like, when you meet them in Rebels, there's something there beyond what is being told. I just have this vibe from a Filoni perspective.
I mean, I was excited at your forethoughts about their getting together and working together and having to...
It didn't end up happening, and I'm pleasantly surprised. It's interesting to me when that stuff doesn't happen. I was right about other stuff, so I'm okay.
Sure. I don't make predictions, so I'm not going to say I told you so or anything like that, because I was just willing to see where the story was going to unfold. I liked how the story unfolded between the two of them. Mm-hmm. They definitely collided together and went their separate ways.
Well, so, like, in Rebels, he specifically says, "Running away again, Lady Tano."
Yeah.
And none of that ever happened.
He ran away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, twice. Running three away times.
Again, Lady. Like I always do.
Yeah. But but to me, that either could indicate there is an untold story somewhere between this time and Rebels that we don't know about and that hasn't been brought up because it wasn't mentioned the last time she saw him. So there could be a round the time of Solo time period story.
I do a lot of dungeon mastering and I say a lot of things thinking, ooh, that sounds ominous and interesting.
No,
and then it doesn't come to
pass. I know,
pass.
But the thing is about Star Wars is that when somebody says a line like that, they try to justify it at some point. Well, at least some of the storytellers do. They try to be like, oh, that's why he said that. Like the first line of A New Hope. The Rebel Alliance has just won a battle, a key battle, and, you know, one significant... They built a movie around one line in the opening crawl for A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
So people are going to notice that. People are going to be like, oh, there's a Star Wars story there. Let's tell that.
Well, you keep bringing it up, so hopefully they'll do it.
They haven't listened to me yet, so...
I don't care, because Gigi saves the day.
Yes, Gigi does save the day.
Because Maul throws her, and she's... flung backwards, both lightsabers come out, she's cutting through the floor, not enough friction this time, Ahsoka Tano, over the edge she goes, wait, no, Gigi with the rope!
Yeah.
So happy.
Yeah. And then he jumps in the ship and starts to fly away, and she grabs the ship with the Force. And this is where, so we saw him destroy the hyperdrives, which is a use of the Force that we have not seen that level of.
Yeah.
And then she grabs the ship, which is very comparable to what Rey does in, The Rise of Skywalker. But
then she blew it up. But.
Yeah, with her lightning fingers, sparkle fingers.
Whew, I'm glad that Captain Sparkle Fingers is not in this episode.
She still killed a bunch of people.
Who killed people?
Rey.
Oh, yeah, of course, Rey did, but not Ahsoka Tano.
No. But so she grabs the ship, and I just, like, these are extreme uses of the Force.
Yes.
Like, way more than we have seen, I think, at any point. And that's where I'm like, that's weird, isn't it? Like, how extreme both.
I mean, I don't know. It's kind of just forcing the Force.
No. To me, it is like when the Force is with you, both of them, the Force, who doesn't really choose between good and bad, it just says, you're still important to me. It gives you the power that you need. And there isn't really a limit to that as long as you need it and you're tapped into it and you're allowing it to work with you. And both of them do those things.
Maul with the hyperdrives.
Yeah.
Tano with the ship.
Yeah.
Maul doesn't do anything with the Force. All he just does is push harder on a stick.
I mean, in this moment, yeah. but with the hyperdrives, just I was just commenting on the overall use of the Force in this episode.
He was just a little boy with a stick.
Yes. And he escapes and he like yeets himself out of there.
Yes, he is gone.
Gone.
Good old one-liner Maul gets away.
Runs away again. So I don't understand the line in Rebels, and we have yet to see that resolved. The ship is falling out of the sky.
Absolutely.
It is very scary. It's a very scary scene. Rex and Ahsoka try to go and get away. The three droids are cornered by clone troopers and destroyed.
Yep.
And that happens off screen.
Like, gleefully destroyed.
Yeah.
Gleefully. And it not even really off screen. We see the two droids left because R7's already dead.
Mm-hmm.
We see the two droids cowering, Cheep Cheep and GG.
Yeah.
And they're cowering there. They've just saved the day.
You looked at me very worried, like, because we watched this episode together the first time. I was I'm not fine with it, obviously, but like I didn't react to it because I kind of expected them to not make it out. But you seemed very upset.
I was, because they gave us these two really fun, interesting new characters, and I would have liked a droid to have made it, and none of them made it. Like none.
Yeah.
And those clones destroyed them with glee.
Yeah.
Like, oh, these are evil droids. Let's take them out, boys. And they, like, overkilled the poor... Those droids don't have any
But I mean, you weapons. Think about it. That's how they've been trained to fight clankers, right? So this is just another version of that. And the clones fight clankers with joy. That's part... Like, they play games with shooting them and stuff like that.
I guess.
So, like, think about the Bad Batch and how they treated droid death.
I don't want to think about that. I don't want to compare my good clone boys with the destruction of the Separatist army.
Okay.
Anyway. Neither here nor there.
Yes.
So we get the terrible droid screaming death, which is R2's, like, I've been electrocuted sound.
Yeah. The original Ben Burtt scream into the droid making machine that he used.
Wild. And they find a new ship. I guess that one was in for repairs because
it's a Y-wing.
It just needed a new paint job.
Yeah. It's a Y-wing.
It's very clear though that the droid on the ship, the astromech, was broken. Was not functional.
Yeah.
Because you can see that at the end.
Yeah.
So they find a Y-wing and it's 9 minutes and 26 minutes left in the episode.
Yeah.
And Rex says, "Get me over there." And that is the last line of dialogue from a principal character in the episode.
And she uses the Force to push him on there. And then there's this like very dramatic them falling to the sky, them trying to catch each other.
Yep. 36 seconds later.
Yeah.
She's just about made it. Like, oh, she made it and then slipped off the.
Yeah, that was very dramatic.
Oh, so beautiful. 36 seconds later, the clone commanders on the bridge. One of them says, "We're going to break apart." At 8 minutes and 50 seconds left in the episode, and not another word is spoken until the credits roll.
Yep. And there's no words. Well, I mean, there's...
Would you like to know how many minutes of animated action there is before the credits roll?
Sure.
6 minutes and 23 seconds.
Oh, between that point and...
Until created by George Lucas.
Wow. That's intense.
6 minutes and 23 seconds, 36 seconds before that... One line of dialogue in between.
And so as the ship falls to the sky, we presume all of the troopers die.
Yeah, they all die.
In the ship. So I think it's time for death count.
I want to get to death count at the end because there's something clear here. I noticed this twice over.
Okay.
And then again at the very, very end.
Okay. Because
we're only on scene seven. Scene seven is debris flying. And I'm like, that was a lot of debris. That they have somehow miraculously avoided both of them. But okay, fine. They made it. Nope. Swing off the thing. Clouds. So pretty. And that's when we get to scene eight.
Yeah.
The ship crashes into the ground.
Yep.
We think they've flown away.
Mm-hmm.
They have not.
They come back. Yeah.
Because these are their brothers. these are their friends.
Yeah.
No matter what has happened to them, Ahsoka Tano has proven she will not kill them. She'll be there to remember them. And the way the ship is crashed into the ground looks exactly like a coffin.
Yes.
It is shaped like a coffin. She's gathered at the front, all the headstones of the helmets.
Yeah.
Which Jesse's in front.
I mean, typically...
The grand symbol of the Republic is the main focal point of this gigantic coffin.
I know.
There's no more Clone Wars. This is the end. That is as clear a picture as you can paint. Here is the coffin. Here is the funeral. This is the end.
This is the end. And I really do hope that this is the end, because I feel like Dave has always been like, you know, I don't want to tell any more stories. I want to have a nice capper on everything. And that's like, that's his now passion, is to make sure that all of his stories are complete. But to me, helmets on spikes, on pikes especially, don't give me a good feeling of like remembrance.
Mm-hmm.
It makes
their heads on stakes.
Yeah, it makes me feel very uncomfortable.
That's fair. Yeah.
And I don't know why that choice was made, because it borders between these were my enemies and I had to kill them, even though she didn't.
Yeah.
And these were my allies and I'm respecting them. And it messes with me a little bit, because of like, that is not typically, where was the wood from?
Well, elsewhere.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, but it just feels like maybe just like setting them on the ground, you know, like, I don't know. It might have looked differently, but they put them on spikes, because there's this scene in The Mandalorian where the stormtrooper helmets are on spikes, and along with kind of like other heads. And it's like, yeah, specifically in a very threatening, like death-like, like making a message.
These are the people we have slain.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, it's just such an odd mix to me.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
I didn't see it that way, because no, I saw that coffin and that gave me the grave marker image.
Yeah.
As opposed to, with, if you hadn't seen the coffin, this looks like a threat. You're like, you're threatening to say, these are all the people I've killed.
Exactly.
But
yeah. But I think it the problem I have is that it does both to me.
Right.
And that's weird.
Death is always a threat.
No.
Yeah.
I know. It just more like, I don't know what's being said, if it's purposefully trying to say both.
Yeah, I definitely don't think, I don't know. But the music, about the music too.
Yeah, the music is...
Here we are at the end.
Oh my goodness. But first, through all of the action, it has a very Blade Runner-esque, the synth continues its anxiety the whole time. It heightens all of the anxiety. And this episode and the last episode felt more in alignment with the synth that we hear in The Mandalorian than anything that we have heard in the Clone Wars thus far.
Yeah.
So it's
there was not a single trace of classical Star Wars music.
It was odd, but yet also appropriate. I don't know. It was interesting.
I loved it, but like The Mandalorian, I don't know if I can like just walk along and start humming it.
Oh, I can hum The Mandalorian.
You can hum those 8 bars of The Mandalorian.
No, but you can't do like the anxiety fight sequence stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the synth stuff in the background, it's evocative. But it is not telling the story. It's just adding to the story.
Yeah.
Like, I can listen to A New Hope, or I can listen to The Phantom Menace, and it tells a story as you listen to the album.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm gonna be able to listen to this full 4 set of Clone Wars episodes and feel a story is being told.
Yeah.
From the music.
There's just points in The Mandalorian that I can't do that because of the heavy use of synth. And there's like this crunchy noise that ends up causing anxiety. But anything that relates back to The Mandalorian or to the child, like I can instantly tell like the leitmotif or the themes that are being used. Whereas I couldn't recognize as much during these scenes.
Nope.
Yeah.
It was powerful. The beginning, especially with the choral bit.
Oh, yeah, when we cut in.
But
yeah.
Why isn't that at the end? I don't know.
Yeah, it was odd.
It seemed like you had it backwards.
Maybe.
Like, I would have ended with the choral bit.
I don't know. I'm going to have to think about it for a while.
That was the more powerful piece. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, and that it was a very powerful choral arrangement.
I don't know what
yeah.
words they're saying, but they were cool words.
Yeah, they were cool.
As always with Star Wars.
Where'd you get that one from? Was it ancient Sanskrit this time?
Kora, Mandrana, Kora.
And then we get an epilogue, which is new.
Yeah.
Oh, I do want to point out one thing. So Ahsoka drops her lightsaber, the one.
Yep.
My understanding from the Ahsoka book, because this is actually something that is mentioned in the Ahsoka book as a prologue, she buries her lightsabers, both of them. That does not happen in this, no. Which is interesting. So she drops the one lightsaber, just leaves it there, and she's wearing this cloak.
Yep.
Which is really cool and reminiscent of the end of Rebels. The end of Rebels.
Exactly what yeah. Fulcrum was wearing too, right? When yeah. Fulcrum makes her appearance, she's wearing that big cloak. Pulls the cloak down.
Right.
Yeah, at the very beginning. She's definitely now become Cloak Soka.
Cloak Soka.
A so cloak?
No. I don't like either of those. So
Soka Cloak Tano?
And Rex and her leave. Time passes. And
I love how she dropped the lightsaber. It felt like to me she was saying goodbye to the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I'm gonna find a new way.
Yeah. It was really powerful. And we have this gorgeous cut to scene where, you know, time has passed. Suddenly everything is covered in snow. And I actually asked
buried.
Yeah, I asked him like, why does this feel like Hoth? And they specifically made it feel like Hoth. Like that.
Yeah, with the probe droids.
Yeah, and like the snowtroopers and, you know, and we have
actual stormtroopers at this point.
Actual stormtroopers. So time has passed.
We still get skinny Vader though, so.
Well, he's very skinny.
Yeah. This Vader's skinny.
Yeah. But I mean, how much time has passed? Probably less than a year.
We don't have dad bod Vader yet.
No.
So we're okay. It's not been that much time.
20 years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
20 years walking around on legs that are not your own. Of course, you're not going to lose a lot of weight that way. Where your quadriceps and your hamstrings, they're not going to be burning any calories.
He doesn't work out much. No. So he approaches the grave of all of these troopers.
Yep.
And he sees the lightsaber. And we hear the screech of the owl overhead.
Ooh, it's an owl with the lung.
So it's specifically in Star Wars called a convery.
That's the word you said. I couldn't remember what it was, but you have a little owly thing with the little Velcro strap that you would wear occasionally before.
Yes. So there is two owls you could buy at Star Wars Celebration last year. One that looks like the Morai Morai, who is Ahsoka's. We call her the Force Owl, basically, because she is a reborn guide to Ahsoka from the daughter. That's what we know. We don't know much about her, but she has the same coloring and effect as the daughter. And Convery is actually a reference to Dave Filoni's wife's name.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. So he named the species after her. And we see a lot of Convery's actually in Rebels, like throughout the whole run.
Yes, there were tons of those in.
So symbolically, what we have happening is Vader is there. We can actually see his eyes through the red lenses, which were, you know, the classic red lenses from A New Hope. You can actually see his eyes through there, and he looks at the lightsaber, ignites it. The Convery is overhead.
He kneels down and picks it up. Yeah, that kneel is almost like an homage kneel. It's not like he used the Force to pull it to his hand. He kneels down, he brushes the snow away,
mm-hmm.
and picks it up.
And takes it with him.
And then he keeps it. I thought it was really cool. He's like, he didn't yeet it back into the graveyard.
Yeah, no, he keeps it.
Yeah.
It's important. Kyber crystals are the heart of the person. This lightsaber represents your life kind of thing.
Yeah, and then you get that solitary figure all in black. On a field of white.
Yeah. With the cloak flowing in the background, exactly like how when they see each other again, that's how he looks.
Yeah. And it was very yin-yang for me too.
Mm-hmm.
Because we got that moment of her at peace, choosing to make a new new way, a new path in the light.
Mm-hmm.
And here is this white field, the new way, the new light, the new path that she's taken. And here is Vader in black. And he is definitely not going that.
No. And with our with our Force Owl, our Morai flying overhead. And I'm so happy that we got to see the Morai, because the Morai represents all this really cool mythic stuff that ends up happening in Star Wars. And I'm very excited to see what that actually means. What do you mean ends up?
It's always been there. It's all one story.
Yes, but it's leaving it the door open to say, this is important. That's all.
Yep.
Do you want to do Death Count now?
Yes, but I don't think we should do the lead-in sound effect for Death Count, because this is the end.
Do, do, do.
Yeah, would you put in the synth? So let's start with the easy one, which is...
Three droids.
Everyone.
Yeah. Like anyone who was on that ship died.
Two hyperdrives that we knew of. How many people did Maul kill?
Oh, God. Everybody?
Technically, yes.
I mean, but also Rex ejected the escape pod, so he contributed.
But they wouldn't, like, so okay, then it wasn't actually even, then you can go even further back and say it's Palpatine, because he's the one who executed Order 66, which meant that they were willing to give up their lives to kill Jedi.
Yeah.
And as a result, they would never have left anyway.
There are no good, every decision has good and bad consequences.
Order 66 has no good consequences. But nonetheless,
Maul is living.
I beg to differ. Maul killed 20 people on screen.
Yikes.
Yeah, he yeeted so many people.
Oh, yeah, off that.
They need railings.
They need railings. See, it's a Republic problem.
Yeah. They don't need Rey. They need railings. Maybe that's just what people didn't realize. Yes, three droids. Goodbye, R7, GG, and Cheep. I will miss you so much, GG. You're my favorite droid. In this entire season, which is not saying too much because there weren't very many droids this season, but still, nevertheless, you my girl. Okay, how many people did Ahsoka end up actually killing that I can tell is 5.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That door.
One way or another. I didn't count the door.
Well,
it's actually much later on post.
When things are a little bit more desperate.
Things are getting hectic and desperate. 5 people die. Whether that's because of her hand or something else. It's neither here nor there. 5 additional die after Maul kills 20. How many people get stunned by Rex?
Oh my God. Did you count all the stuns?
I have to.
50.
You are very close. It's 55.
Wow.
55 people are stunned.
I wasn't expecting to be that close.
I was trying to do that because like the stunned people are then stunned and we all, I know they're going to die later, but now we've seen them stunned on camera and that
specifically
still
tried to save them.
It still has a dramatic effect.
Yeah.
These people have been stunned. They might be able to get up later. No, they're not. We know the ship is going to crash and they're all going to die. How many people have we seen suffer a fate before this death? It's 55.
Yeah. But hey, they probably didn't feel themselves die.
I don't know. Some of them were stunned pretty early on. But nonetheless, how long is a person stunned for? I don't know.
Don't know. Don't know all these things.
So, justice, victory, and death. How did you feel?
Sad because we knew it had to happen, but I felt like it was a really good choice to keep it focused on Ahsoka and Rex and Maul and like the smaller story of what she was experiencing, because it keeps it tighter to the emotions. And we got to see Rex cry again, which is, I live for, you know, men who can't express emotions breaking down and crying.
I loved it too, like as a whole 4-story arc. I would have liked maybe a bit more Bo-Katan and Mandalore than we got.
Over the arc, yeah.
Over this 4-episode arc.
Yeah, for something that was called The Siege of Mandalore, it didn't feel like there was a lot of siege.
No.
Or Mandalore.
2 whole episodes weren't even on Mandalore.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there was some... There's some loss there that we get as a result. And I realized something, and that has to do with the fact that I think this went a little longer, had more longer periods of just cinematic beauty than dialogue and conflict. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of the historical man versus environment going on here than man versus self or man versus man, right?
Yeah.
You want to archetype it like that. So there's a lot of environmental conflict that's happening in the last episode here and in previous episodes too.
Yeah.
And I realized that we got that because we couldn't go to anybody else.
Yeah, because literally it's a kid's show and you'd see all the Jedi die and that's already in the movie.
Right. We can't go to Anakin.
Yeah.
We've seen that in Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
We can't go to Obi-Wan. We've seen him in Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
There are very few other characters actually still alive that we can jump to. What are we going to go, Hondo Tanaka? Like, he hasn't been introduced at all. So I think they're really missing out on Bo-Katan. And I feel like there could have been something more. You showed us Gar Saxon living and walking away, and you showed us Bo-Katan still alive.
But that wasn't the focus of the story.
It's not.
And so I totally get what you're saying. I think that they will probably, they have an opportunity to come back and tell different stories in either a different medium like comics, etc., and tell us more about what's happened with those characters.
You have to think that they left Mandalore the way it was because the guy who was artistically and story-wise responsible for this season wanted it left alone because he's working on something else as well.
Yeah, and it's completely related to Mandalorians.
Exactly. So he's like, I got to take it to this point, but I can't go any further because I want to explore that in my live action TV show.
Yeah, and the live action TV show talks about like the aftermath of everything that has happened to Mandalore since that point. So
yeah,
it makes a lot of sense. And I trust his storytelling. So yeah.
He wears a lot of hats. I mean, baseball hats and cowboy hats, but he wears a lot of hats.
Yeah. Loves a lot of hockey, wears a lot of hats, loves a lot of wolves. Those three things. I really personally appreciated that it was so cohesive from a story perspective, that it focused on characters and their emotions and how they feel and what things mean to them and how conflicted everything is and messed up. And it just, even though this is how you do tragedy correctly, and you still end up somehow making it hopeful, even though it's absolutely not.
Yeah.
So I just think...
Well, thank you for making yes. me care about characters where I already know they're not going to lose limbs.
Yeah.
They're not going to die. I know that they're safe. And yet you still gave me something to care about.
Very much so. They're safe for now.
Well, yeah.
We don't know what happens to Rex.
No. Well, after Rebels, we don't know what happens to Rex.
After the end of Revenge of the Sith or Return of the Jedi, we don't know what happens exactly. to Rex. Yeah.
You got to hope the guy can retire.
I mean, he's really old by that point. Like, yeah. He's like 70
I hope in
clone
journal.
Years.
I'd like to read the Rex journal.
It'd be a really good book. The Adventures of Rex. I would read it like crazy. I love him. It's so funny because a bunch of my friends on Twitter were like, suddenly I'm like super into Rex, and I'm like, thank you for joining the club. I've been a Rex person for many, many years. Welcome.
I always liked Cody.
He has a stick up his butt.
He is a commander. Rex was not. There's it's nothing true. He could do about it. He had a lot more responsibilities it's than true. Rex did. Also, Rex reported to Anakin, who didn't give two flying Fs.
It's very true, yes.
Like, Anakin would walk in and Rex could be pooping in somebody else's helmet. And he'd be like, why are you pooping in that guy's helmet? Seemed like the thing to do. Carry on.
Yes, exactly.
Pass the helmet. Like, who knows what Anakin would say.
Do you need some help? I got this one, bro. Yeah.
Being such terribly weird imagery that nobody needs to think or picture.
But now anyway, they've got it.
Now they've got that.
That's our gift to you. Yeah. No, and it just makes me happy that we have Dave Filoni working with Jon Favreau and we get a season 2 of Mandalorian, and we know that the animation department has something cooking because they tweeted about it. They're like, don't worry, we're still working on stuff. So I'm just happy that they're...
How could they not be working on stuff? Hey, like, they better be putting something together. They've built such a beautiful team
mm-hmm.
who has worked so hard together
yep.
on this.
So let's talk about...
Let's talk about the team.
Let's talk about the team. Yeah.
So I want to talk about, I've kind of built my way up to this. I've mentioned them over the time of the entire run of this, over the last, I guess, like almost 12 weeks, 3 months here. But I want to talk about the directors.
Okay.
But before that, I want to point out that, yes, I have spent tons of minutes talking about tons of people. And it feels like I've talked about like every single person under the sun that's in the credits. But I will tell you, I have not talked about the specific animators or the storyboard artists or the production manager or the production coordinator or even the script supervisors or the colorists or assistants or online editors or the story coordinator, the design coordinator, the animation coordinator, the lighting coordinator. There's still tons more people involved in the production of this show every single week for a 26-minute cartoon. So I'm going to say thank you to all of them for their labors of love. I sincerely hope that this entire machine that is working there continues to operate and all of those gears are oiled and well-greased for whatever comes next. Please, so let's talk about the directors. How many directors did this season have?
Four.
No, seven.
Oh, okay.
This entire season had seven directors. Brian O'Connell got to direct an episode with David Filoni. Is it David Filoni or Dave Filoni?
Dave Filoni.
With Dave Filoni. He got one episode. Episode four. Bosco Ng, Kyle Dunleavy, and Stuart Lee each did two episodes. And it's funny how I'm building it all down. IMDb lists Dave Filoni as a director for all of them. He did not really. He only directed.
He's like the supervising director, right?
Correct. But he technically directed episode one and episode six. Kind of, you know, episode one or four or six. I can't recall. He was the executive director for all of them. So he gets top billing for the most part in all of them. And he wrote a lot of them too. So his hand is on the stick shift of all of this, and the e-brake and the gas and the windows.
And he draws all the pictures too.
And he gets to control the music. So passenger seats don't get, anyway. So these gentlemen all working with Dave Filoni to execute the vision in mm-hmm. their various ways. Okay. So we're up to four now, and that is seven episodes. Strangely enough, two gentlemen then each directed three episodes. Saul Ruiz and Nathaniel Villanueva, who I've talked about before. I've said their names a ton of times, right? It's because they both directed an episode in the first two arcs, both like one in one and one in the other. And then for the last four episodes here, it went Ruiz, Villanueva, Ruiz, Villanueva.
Cool.
Specific, intentional, done in such a way that they could work together to build a story and then direct their component parts. But I've talked about a lot of them already, and I've told you stories about who they are and where they came from and what they've done. I haven't talked about Dave Filoni.
I feel like this is a full new episode, though.
Which is a full new episode.
I'm talking about Dave Filoni.
So I don't want, like, Dave Filoni has done a ton of interviews.
Yes.
Dave Filoni is basically the base of modern Star Wars,
yes,
in many ways, especially the animated side and now into the live action TV show side. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been really connected at all with the movies ever since Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
He was brought on at the tail end of Revenge of the Sith in 2005 because George liked what he was doing in Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Yes. And he had an interview, and that when you hear them talk about the interview, it's really, really funny.
So an episode of Star Wars, like Unplugged sort of thing, where they went behind in Mandalorian, came out today about directors.
Yep.
Really great. I recommend those 32 minutes. It was wonderfully well spent.
Gallery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All about directors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Gallery, Unplugged, whatever. TV.
Yeah.
You click the button and it turns on the show. It'll be really prominent in your Disney Plus.
Yep.
Nonetheless, Dave Filoni tells this great story about his introduction to George Lucas, his 10-minute interview with George Lucas. The 10 minutes are up, like click, done. He's escorted out to a green room. He's sitting in the green room all alone. The producer opens the door. Dave likes you. You got it. Thumbs up. And then the door closes. And that's all he got.
Yep.
But it is interesting to see how this guy who just did storyboarding and he just did stories, who loves Star Wars, like he bleeds Star Wars. He bleeds Star Wars so much that when he was working at Nickelodeon, he thought he was literally getting pranked by people on another show because they all knew he loved Star Wars that much.
That he got the phone call, yeah.
That he would get a phone call and he would think it's a fake because everybody knows how much he loves Star Wars.
Yes.
So where does he go from there? Is he's brought into their nascent story group, nascent create and piece, because George wants to do animation.
Yeah.
And he wants to do animation of the style and the way that Avatar The Last Airbender was telling stories.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes so much sense when you look at Airbender and how much people love Airbender.
Yes.
And how Airbender built a world and created moral quandaries and moral ramifications.
Yeah.
Four simple stories that kids could get and think about till when they're older, and adults could watch and see
and enjoy as well,
and have chats with their kids. The number of times we talked about Avatar The Last Airbender with our kids,
yeah,
and about the morality at play here, and how does Zuko contain his anger, and how does he become a better person? Well, of course you're going to take Dave Filoni from that and you're going to put him in Star Wars and he's going to run because it's the same sort of world.
And I love that Dave always talks about how he, everything that he learned from about Star Wars, he learned from watching George's movies and then from talking to George about Star Wars and what things mean. And he just listened. And that was his, that was how he learned Star Wars, was by listening and watching. And I feel like, and he doesn't like to explain all of his things. He explains things, but then he doesn't explain things. He explains things in metaphor. So like when you listen to the interviews talking about Mortis, as an example, in the Clone Wars, he talks about it. He's like, so Mortis is metaphorical and it's like the Dagobah tree, but for Anakin. So he didn't want to explain exactly what it was. So he used a metaphor to explain it. And I'm like, so it's a Force vision as a place, but it's Anakin's Force vision as an entire planet. Gotcha. He even says,
Luke gets a tree. Anakin gets a planet.
Yes, a diamond-shaped planet. And he's like, this dagger's a metaphor. And I'm like, it's all just psychology. That's what he's doing. He's pulling in these psychological like archetypes and symbols and things like that into Mortis. And he doesn't like to explain what he does. But then he also explains it using other references and other things. And so if you're aware of those references, like he talked about the world between worlds being like the wood between worlds in Narnia. And it's like the specific conduit between all of these different places within the Star Wars universe. And that's really cool. That's super cool to think of that. And that's exactly what the wood between worlds is in Narnia. It's like these pools where you can go and you can go to all of the different worlds within Narnia and the rings, using the rings. It's just, he doesn't like to explain things because he wants to teach people to think about things and to think about them for themselves and find the meaning in the story for themselves.
But also, if you fully articulate what a thing is, then it can never be anything more than that thing.
It's true.
If he says the planet is Anakin's vision in the same way that the Dagobah tree is Luke's vision, he just makes a comparison between the two and allows it to be extrapolated in a greater, more generalized sense.
Yeah.
So that he doesn't have to say it is this and then therefore it is only ever going to be that.
Yeah.
And a key to note, the pools in the woods, the wood between the worlds with all the pools, Lewis didn't come up with that until
way later.
The last, he wrote The Magician's Nephew last.
No.
That was his last book.
I know. To me, it was just a really interesting thing. And he likes to think about things in that he doesn't want to make everything clear cut because it's all mythic and it's all story and he's trying to make... He's trying to make things fuzzier while still telling more stories.
Which is interesting because cinematically, he's trying to take all of the fuzzy out.
Yes.
And that was what people asked, like, what is season 7 about? And was it easier to do it? And he said, it wasn't easier, but there were more possibilities. And what that leads me to say, to think, is that, okay, it would have been easier if they had just gone and done the exact same thing. But mm-hmm. he always has to push the edge. He always wants to see more. He's like George in that mm-hmm. way. If he can have 8 stormtroopers in the background, why can't he have 800 stormtroopers in the background?
Yeah, like, why can't they push the visuals to make the animation look extremely beautiful and really make this season look wonderful? Why can't they try to make the story mean something different or have a different layer to it? Like in The Mandalorian, with working with ILM, why can't we do, you know, something that looks like $20 million for $10 million.
Yeah. Or in you this know? Case, more clone troopers. That is literally what he said. That was his one point, was like, really, one of the things is just being able to add more clone troopers into a battle.
Yeah.
They were never able. We got in this series, this of 12 in this season, we got more clone troopers than in all of the other seasons combined.
Oh my God. No, and that makes sense because it takes time to render all of the clone troopers exactly. And they had to do tight-in shots so you couldn't see all of them. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Especially when you look at the Bad Batch, when the leans back and you see that entire battalion of mm-hmm. droids get wiped out. All of them are autonomously created and autonomously working, and they're not
yeah.
click and copy-paste.
And it's difficult to actually do that, and that costs money to do that. That's the thing, like everything that exists in this digital world that they create costs money. And that's why, like, the asset people are really, really important.
And that, back in the day when it was going to cost you $50 to get 6 stormtroopers nowadays, or clone troopers nowadays, $50 will get you 12 clone troopers.
Yeah.
So it was interesting that he said, because there were more possibilities, it wasn't easier. Because we have the ability and the potential and the rendering mm-hmm. and the RAM and the dedicated technology and the people in place.
Yeah,
they've
the right
built
people.
Up this
yeah.
team. They know what they're doing and they can constantly push boundaries that they never thought they could push before. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Dave Filoni, for not resting on laurels.
Yeah.
For coming back 6 years later and saying, no, let's do it. And let's build on all the things we've learned in Rebels and all the things we learned in Resistance and all the things we learned even from Destiny?
Star Wars Forces of Destiny.
Yes. All the things we learned from those shows and put that into this.
Yep.
Culminating capstone. So I can finally put to rest a show that never got a satisfying conclusion.
And now this is a satisfying conclusion to it.
Well, he put the nail in the coffin, or the pike
with the stormtrooper helmet near the coffin.
In the ship coffin.
Yeah. thank you, Kyle, for adding so much in your knowledge and educating me, especially because I have not looked up all of these things. And this has been a lot of fun to learn all about the different parts of the production and appreciate the people that did so much work into this whole show. So thank you for doing all of this work for the past 11 and a little bit weeks.
Well, thank you for having me. And thank you to Claudia Anahi Ramirez, who is Dave Filoni's assistant for the last 5.5 years.
For keeping him on schedule.
For keeping him fully caffeinated and on time for all of his
knowing
things.
Where he puts his hat.
Hats. He has so many hats.
Making sure, you know, the wolves are at bay. I don't know.
Or in the proper loading bay.
I don't know.
Now that there in fact are Star Wars?
Star Wars wolves.
Space wolves.
He loves animals.
Yes.
Except monkeys.
Huh.
He doesn't like monkeys.
I feel like that's a "the more you know" yeah. moment, but yeah, it's kind of like
Ashley Eckstein wanted a monkey on her boot and on Ahsoka's boot, and he that got nixed in concept. He drew it on her boot for yep. her, and he didn't end up showing up, so I don't think he likes monkeys very much.
Wow. So Ahsoka was supposed to have a monkey on her boot?
Yeah, because in the original concept design for Ahsoka's like lost days or whatever, like her on her own,
right?
She had an outfit, and he's like, I'm going to draw an animal on your boot. He calls her up, and he's like, I'm going to draw an animal on Ahsoka's boot. What do you want on your boot? And she's like, I like monkeys. And he's like, monkey. And he draws the monkey for her.
That's adorable.
And there's like pictures you can see of Ahsoka with a monkey on her boot.
Maybe she gets a monkey on her boob, because that's the word I thought you initially said. And I was like, boots. Really? I didn't
boot.
Think.
Boot.
Yeah. Nope, I got it now.
Boots.
Enunciation is key.
I'm very tired. It's very late.
It is. And just thank you.
Yeah?
I know that you've been very busy with everything you've got going on for Star Wars. I know that tomorrow/today now is a massive day for you, and that you've had some amazing May the 4th be with you moments today. So
when we're recording this, I don't know when this is gonna come out with how busy I am.
Yes, well, we all know what's coming out on Thursday, because that's your normal release schedule.
Oh, I released the other one early.
Well, if it does come out, then it comes out. But thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Well, thank you for contributing so much, and I know people appreciated everything that you brought to the show, so thank you.
Cool.
You're going to have to come back for a regular episode now that you're like used to me. Just looking blank.
I feel like you're used to me because I've got a bunch of notes and we have a structured format of a show.
Yeah.
I feel like if we get into discussions about anything beyond that,
we're like, we're sticking to the format as a husband and wife crew.
Everyone will see just how we fight
about Star Wars
in general.
I am an opinionated person on Star Wars.
Yes,
we could just do trivia. That was fun.
It was very fun. We can just do that again anytime.
All right, well, thank you everyone for tuning in and listening to us talk about Star Wars, The Clone Wars Season 7. This has been just an absolute blast. I'm going to miss talking about it regularly. And I look forward to the next animation endeavor from Star Wars. So, Kyle, where can people find you online if they are looking for you?
Always so specific. So, if you want to find me, check out Tavern Tales, the podcast. It is my Dungeons and Dragons weekly podcast, starring none other than Marie Claire Gould as one of the five players at my table, which comes out every Wednesday like clockwork. And ladies and gentlemen, honestly, Tavern Tales is the only reason you have what the Force.
It's so true.
You should give my podcast a listen, because all of the equipment that Marie Claire uses and all of the knowledge that she has about editing and producing a podcast
and mic etiquette
and scheduling and putting it into a website is because I did it first, and I still have her on my show every single week because she is a fantastic player and makes hilarious and really bad decisions.
I make terrible decisions.
The best of worst decisions. Especially in regards to character. Somebody who knows myth as well as you do, who knows structure, who knows psychology as well as you make the strangest characters.
This is the fun, though.
That's fair. I'm not doubting that.
Yeah. All right. Everyone take care. Bye. Thank you for listening to What the Force. I'm Marie Claire Gould, your host. Our music is orchestral music composed by Christy Carew for What the Force. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/whattheforce. We'd like to thank all our patrons, especially those who love and are obsessed with What the Force. Melody, Night Huntress, In Wild Space, Susan, Brad, Anna Perez, Macau Mom, Neil, and James. Make sure you like and subscribe on your podcast app of choice or on YouTube. Leaving a 5-star review on iTunes helps other people find the show. You can connect with us on Twitter at What the Force Show, What the Force Podcast on Facebook, or on our website, whattheforce.ca. We also have a new Discord. Links are available in the liner notes. Feel free to reach out and start a conversation. Cheers.